Thanks for having me over. So I'm going to try to talk about some ideas that we've been trying to develop with Simeon. And I probably should have made these words bigger than the other words on the page. You'll see what we've been thinking about, at least. So as you all know, string theory doesn't actually require D to be 26. The idea that space-time should be Lorentz invariant does. If D isn't 26, somehow you need to take care of the fact that there's this tadpole for the dilaton. And in principle, there are many ways to do this. And I'd like to be, in an ideal world, I'd be very insouciant about how I'm going to do this. But people have had a lot of ideas about things. But when I need to be concrete, I'm unfortunately going to focus on the linear dilaton CFT, which because I'd like to have a world sheet description. If necessary, I'll turn on some Liouville potential to cut off the strong coupling region. But in this line, we've learned a lot about strings in too few dimensions, and perhaps you could consider this project as sort of a backlash against some claustrophobia that's resulted from this. So in between 1 and 25, there's some things that are pretty confusing. So I'm going to start above 25 today. So a question that I'd like to try to begin answering is how do these strings fit into this web of string dualities that we know a little bit about? Like I said, this comment refers to this where I said that I'd like to not worry about the dilaton tadpole, or rather not worry about how in particular I cancel it. And I'd like to say that the results will say something about however you would cancel it. Never mind that if you're worried about it. So we'll find some supercritical strings where we can make a proposal for how the duality group acts. In the process, we'll come across something which if you like and Simeon doesn't like for some reason, you can consider this as a world sheet description of what might be called NS9 brains, or at least NS9 anti-NS9 pairs, which you should think of as the S duals of D9 brains, if you want. So here's the outline of what I'll try to do. So first, I'll tell you things you know, for a little while. And then I'll do some things that are slightly more scary, so I have some things to say about bosonic supercritical strings. Really, the thing that I would like to have been able to say something about is supercritical superstrings, and I'll get some distance towards doing that, but certainly not as far as I'd like to. And this refers to some things that. We found instead of the things we wanted. Here we go. Oops. So here's some things you know. In general, when we think that we have an S-dual pair of theories, degrees of freedom that are weakly coupled on one side arise as some kind of soliton on the other side, and the soliton should become light and at strong coupling, and so obviously they're important references I've admitted. And the basic starting example that's a starting point for this that I'll sort of get everything by inheritance from is type 2B string theory. And so as you all know, this theory has a D string, which is a charged, what's going on? Oh, really? Okay. I knew there was. I hope there's no monotremy. So there's a D string, like I was saying, and it's coupled to this Ramon row 2 form. And under S duality, the fields of type 2B transform this way. The dilaton goes to minus itself, that is, a G string goes to 1 over D string, and this 2 form is exchanged with the one that the fundamental string couples to, and the Einstein frame metric transforms like this. And so the tension of the D string looks like this. And so if you plug this into here, at strong coupling, this becomes the tension of the fundamental string. Yes?
The GI thing going to be tri-GI thing. Isn't that what happens with the string frame?
No, I think the string frame metric is the same on the two sides.
Einstein is like a super
variant. Uh-oh. Let's see.
Is the string metric?
Oh, I guess it better be, huh? Oh, okay. I guess I must have had a minus sign in my frame switch. Good, because the reason I wrote this was because I was checking that the tension matched. Okay. Thank you. So right, like that, and so good. So the world volume theory of this D string, which is going to be the piece of information that we're going to try to exploit throughout what I'm going to say, is a two-dimensional gauge theory, and it's not a particularly interesting two-dimensional gauge theory. And so like. I think all two-dimensional gauge theory, it's very, very asymptotically free, meaning it becomes strongly coupled in the infrared. And this one is particularly interesting because nothing is coupled to the gauge field in this example. This is the main piece of data that we're going to use, which is that the way we can learn about strong coupling is by looking at the infrared physics of this D string world volume. And so in this particular example, you can see that this D string has the same spectrum as a long fundamental type 2B string. And because of taking this infrared limit, that's why we ignore the massive open string modes. There are a lot of examples where you can, for example, in supersymmetric compactifications of type 2B, where you can use this as a way to find a linear sigma model for the dual fundamental string world sheet theory. And so I'm going to try to we're going to try to extend this idea to more dangerous territory. So, but before we do that, let's do another example where it works extremely well, which is type 1 heterotic duality, where we can find the SO32 heterotic string as the type 1 D string. And so, just to explain some details of this, because we'll need them in a moment, relative to what happened in type 2B. I should have said this was a Green-Schwarz string. There were some space-time and world sheet spinners, which were S plus and S minus. And here the Bohr interval projection kills one of those guys. And the second thing that happens is that there are strings that stress between the 1 brains and the 9 brains. And the light modes on those strings are fermions, which are chiral on the G string world sheet, but hence this plus. And good. And further, because the type 1 strings are unoriented, these things are real. And because of the Chan Patton factors, they're in the 32 of the 9 ring gauge group. So here the two-dimensional gauge theory that we're talking about is both more and less interesting. So it's more interesting because these 1-9 strings are in the fundamental. They have an end on the D string, and so. It is, in fact, coupled to something, but it's less interesting because the gauge group is Z2 instead of U1 because of the Orient fold projection. But the Z2 axis on these fermions is lambda goes to minus lambda, and this is where the GSO projection comes from in the SO32 string. Good. So this is as great as you could have wanted it. But now, so here let's talk about a slightly less stable theory. The theory I want to talk about here is type O, which is perhaps defined to be type 1 divided out by a 2 pi rotation in space. So it's a thing that acts as minus 1 on all fermions. And I suppose Bergman and Gabriel showed that it's also the same as type 0b mod orientation reversal. And so this name was sort of medically inevitable, but it's typographically pretty irritating. It's important to distinguish between this O and this 0, and because the terminals that Simeon and I use actually use the same character for O and 0. This has led to some annoying miscommunication. But anyway, this O is different than that 0. A good way to think about this theory is starting from here, in type 1, we had O9 planes. This orbifold introduces also some anti-O9 planes. And so the crosscap tadpoles cancel. The crosscap tadpoles for the Ramon-Ramon fields cancel between these two things. However, there's still a dilaton tadpole from the negative tension of these things. And that you can cancel by adding something that cancels the dilaton tadpole but carries no Ramon-Ramon charge, and that's achieved by 32 brains and anti-brains. So there are no tadpoles in this theory, but it is a type 0-like theory, so there's a bulk tachyon. And there are also two sets of Ramon-Ramon fields, but because of the Garantifold, there's only 2, 6, and 10, and not whatever the other ones are, 0, 4, and 8. And from the open string sector, there are 32 and SO32 gauge symmetry from these 9 brains, and then there's a bifundamental tachyon from the 9 bar strings. Okay. This theory has an interesting spectrum of D brains, and in particular, there's a D string, which is charged under one of these Ramon-Ramon 2 forms, whose world sheet spectrum is the same as a bosonic string on a 16 torus, this particular 16 torus. And this was pointed out by these nice people. And further, this Z2 that I put here is again comes from the gauge group on the D string, which just acts as it's a non-chiral JSO projection on the lambda fermions. Oh, I guess I should have said the reason that here we get SO32 times SO32 from this point of view is that this SO32 comes from the 1-9 strings, and this comes from the 1-9 bar strings, which have opposite chirality. And so these people propose that this provides a fundamental string world sheet for a dual weakly coupled description. Let me leave it at that. Let's extend this a little bit. Let's suppose that we still cancel the Ramon-Ramon tadpole, but not the dilaton tadpole. So instead of adding 32 brains and anti-brains, we add 32 plus n, where n is some number that we get to pick. There's a disk-level dilaton tadpole. And now the open string gauge group, instead of being SO32 times SO32, is slightly bigger, and there's a tachyon in this slightly bigger bifundamental. So now let's consider a D-string probe of this theory. I'd like to ignore the back reaction from this dilaton tadpole, because I want to think about this D-string probe at zero string coupling as the UV description of this world volume theory. So again, the world sheet spectrum has these 10 free bosons and no space-time fermions. And in addition, it has these 32 plus n Majorana spinners from the 1-9 and 1-9 bar strings. And again, this is non-chiral Z2 projection. Suppose we try to use this as a fundamental string world sheet. In this case, there's a sphere-level tadpole just because it's not critical. As I said, I'm going to choose a particular way to cancel this, which is to turn on a linear dilaton in the time direction. This is the stress tensor that I'd like to consider. It's chosen to have Z equals 26. It has this free boson and these 32 plus n Majorana fermions, and then there's a linear dilaton in the time direction whose slope is chosen to cancel that the tadpole from the fermions. Q squared is proportional to n. This is a kind of theory that's been studied quite a bit in the past. And so let me try to summarize my interpretation of the results that people have found. The Mashell condition that you get from the L0 part of this is simply, so for some string mode of mass m, some string mode whose oscillator energy is m squared, the dispersion relation is like this, which is a little mysterious, but let me try to explain how to think about it. The only effect of this linear dilaton from the world sheet point of view is this coupling to the world sheet curvature. And so if you look at the equation of motion for one of these x fields, it's this. So it just says that this translation current is conserved, except for this coupling to the curvature, and this d phi dx is this q mu that I wrote on the previous page. And so on the cylinder, which is flat, everything is just the same as if there were no linear dilaton. And so, yeah, that's right. So in this particular case, that you can, because I've compactified some of what you would have considered as space-time directions, that you can put the spectrum into SO91 representations. But in terms of the energy that you would naively interpret there, the things you'd want to say are, for example, the gauge boson, which should have only 8 polarization states. It does have only 8 polarization states, but it's not at 0. And so maybe a better way to say this is that just in terms of the space-time effect of action, this happens just because of this coupling to the background dilaton. This is probably the easiest way to say it. So you know, if I have some effective action for these string modes, there's this coupling to the dilaton, and when I look at the equation of motion for this thing, that I integrate by parts, the derivative hits this, and I get this extra term in the equation of motion, which accounts for that that extra term. So this just says that these on-shell wave functions have this extra factor of e to the q times time, but the spectrum is the same as that of any of the regular bosonic string. So in this particular example, as I said, there's this SO32 plus n left and right gauge symmetry, and states which are charged under this vertex operators for them have this form. So there's a thing that's in the bifundamental. These things have weight 1/2, and so to put this on shell, this has to be a tachyon. And then there's a gauge boson kind of thing, so this is just a SO32 current, and this is there's some polarization vector. And so this is massless. Again, as in the Bergmann-Gabriel example, the gauge group and Higgs fields are the same as in this other open string theory that we started with. And I should also say that there are these, by taking currents on the left and currents on the right, you can also make massless scalars. And you should think of these as changing the, I guess I should have explained this. If you bosonize these fermions, you can think of this as a torus, and these things change the radii and the angles of the torus. As we've learned, on the open string side, we can understand what happens when you turn on the charged tachyon. And we understand these unstable brain anti-brain pairs as excitations above the closed string vacuum. There's a clear conjecture for what happens if we try to condense this charged tachyon in this theory, which is that you should get back to the critical theory without the charged objects. From the worldview point of view, this is also... Whoa. Did this move? Okay. Sorry. Did anyone else see that? Okay. Thank you. From a worldview point of view, this is also clear, because the tachyon vertex operator that I wrote down here, just think of this is the tachyon profile. It's a mass, it's an x dependent, in principle x dependent mass term for these lambda fields. So if you turn it on, these lambdas get a mass and go away. To get some perspective on this, let's consider this bosonization that I mentioned a second ago, and consider the case when big N is even. So we can pair the fermions up into complex pairs and turn them into extra x's, which are periodic at the free fermion radius. So the thing we're talking about here is the 26 plus little n dimensional bosonic string on this torus of this particular radius. And so from this point of view, the charge that we've been talking about is just Kaluza-Klein momentum around these extra circles. And these charged tachyons are particular modes of the 26 plus n dimensional tachyon. And so this proposal that I was just making is, I think, a natural extension of what people think the bosonic tachyon does in the critical theory, namely, it eats dimensions of space. To study this in a little more detail, since turning on the zero mode of the tachyon is sort of a hard thing to do, another thing we know from the brain-antibrain system is that we can learn interesting things by studying solitons of the charged tachyon. And so since the Higgs sector is the same, we can try to construct the same kinds of solitons. And let's see if there's something we can check. So in the type O theory, this is an O, there's a coupling like this on the nine-brain, anti-nine-brain world line, where this guy here is one of these Ramon-Ramon six forms. It's the thing that couples to one of the type O five brains. And this is the instanton number of the relative part of this this gauge group. So this is some echo of the fact that in type one, the five brain is an instanton in the nine brain. Let's see if we can. So this suggests that if there is in fact a duality like this, that in the bosonic theory, there should be a coupling of this form, where this trace FOHF is the instanton number of a combination of these supercritical gauge groups, and this B field is the Hodge dual of the B field that couples to the fundamental string. This is an attempt to make a world sheet argument that this in fact happens. If you move the derivatives around, you can rewrite this as a coupling involving the Nevers-Schwarz B field and two factors of this gauge field with some particular polarizations. It's just a bosonic world sheet theory, we can try to construct this matrix element. I think it's possible to convince yourself that actually this matrix element reduces to up to a factor of two, the same calculation you would do in the heterotic string to calculate this coupling between the thing that says that an NS5 brain that the instanton of the gauge field has NS5 brain charge. Okay. Something else you'd like to do to try to convince yourself that this is a good idea is to consider how brain probes of this system respond to turning on this charged tachyon. There's a nice precedent for this. In doing that, I should have said all along that I'm tuning by hand the neutral tachyon to zero. We need to pick which kind of brain probe we're talking about. And so I'd like to talk about a brain which is filling all the infinite dimensions. And so we have to pick some boundary conditions in this Kern algebra. Which since there's this free fermion description, we can just describe in terms of the fermions. The first thing you need to do is identify how the tachyon couples to the open string modes on the brain. In this work, a useful tool for doing this was the fact that there was this quantum symmetry under which the tachyon of interest was charged. In this case, the supercritical gauge symmetry, this SO32, can play this role for us because the tachyon we're talking about is charged under this gauge symmetry. And so we need to find some coupling that to the open string modes that makes this gauge invariant. The trick is to see what happens in the field theory in the open string field theory when you perturb by this operator. The thing I would like to be able to say is that this T couples like a mass for the for all of the fields that move the brain around in these supercritical dimensions. But I can't do that yet. I think this is something that should be doable. So sorry for this disconnect, but I'd like to be able to, I think it should be possible to give much more convincing arguments in the superstring, where there's actually a stable vacuum for the thing to decay to, where we can think of these things as excitations above that vacuum. And I guess I should mention that there's a useful intermediate case where we add extra brain anti-brain pairs in the type 1 theory, which gives what should be a supercritical heterotic theory, but that shares some of the confusions of each of these two cases. So I'll skip that. So I'd like to consider type 2B with N9 brain anti-9 brain pairs, which we know is something that we can learn from since it's been useful for classifying D brain charges, for example. And consider a D string probe of this system. So the spectrum of 1-1 strings is the same as before, and the new ingredient is that there are 1-9 strings, which because there's no OR antifold are now complex, but still chiral, and they're coupled to the gauge multiplet on the 9 brain and on the D string by this kind of superconnection. The tachyon, the 9 anti-9 brain tachyon, couples as a mass to them, as I said before, and they're coupled minimally to this 1 brain gauge field. What's going on? Oops. Okay. But with this matter content, this, wow, that's much darker than it was before. There's an anomaly in this chiral rotation of the phase of the fermions, which is just, okay, it's true. If you turn off the fields on the D string, it's just D mu J mu is F, the D string gauge field. But this axial symmetry is part of the 9 brain gauge group, namely the 1-9 strings are charged oppositely to the 1-9 bar strings. So obviously there can't be an anomaly in the string theory, and this is canceled by this inflow mechanism. And so the basic content of this mechanism is that there's a coupling between the 1 brain gauge field strength and the Ramond-Ramond axion of this form, and this axion picks up a transformation under this axial rotation, which cancels the anomaly. To get our bearings, consider the case when n is 1, then the things that are charged into this gauge field are just a Dirac fermion, so this is just the Schwinger model. It's useful to bosonize this fermion. I'll call this phi. And so this is, again, of the free fermion radius. And the gauge symmetry acts by shifts of this boson. And then the coupling which cancels the anomaly is of this form to this field strength. And so we can recognize this system as actually the path integral construction of T-duality on this boson phi. So namely, you take this, so we have this boson phi, it has the shift symmetry. If we want to T-dualize this boson, we gauge the shift symmetry and then couple the gauge field to some field that doesn't have kinetic terms. So the axion is a 10-dimensional field that doesn't have 2-dimensional kinetic terms. Then there are two ways to fix this gauge symmetry. One is
So this phi is not one of the original space-time dimensions?
Phi is the bosonization of the 1-9 fermions. So it's an open string field. It's an open string field. So at the moment I'm saying nothing that is not manifestly true. I'm just talking about this 1-9-9 bar system. But it will indeed want, you know, try to become an extra dimension. Right, that's the I should have said that this is all under this heading here. But the idea is that we're gonna try to think of this one brain world volume theory as providing a description of a string we can quantize. So there are two ways to fix this gauge. So if you want us to pick this unitary gauge, which gets rid of phi, and then the path integral over A, over this D-string gauge field, will induce two-dimensional kinetic terms for the axion, which is a closed string field. It's crazy. But then it's in this construction, it comes out at the inverse of the free fermion radius. And so you can re-fermionize it. And you get a Dirac fermion with a non-Carl GSR projection. Okay, so the other thing you can do, though, is if you actually consider fluctuations of this axion, because of this coupling, it gives a delta function which sets to zero this field string. And actually, you can just get rid of the gauge field that you added, and you get the model that you started with. Okay, so this is all to argue that it seems to argue that the gauge group on the D string, even though in this case it's much more interesting than it was in the cases without the nine brains, it actually doesn't do very much. So here, please correct me if this is wrong, but except that in order to couple the gauge field to the, in order to couple the this these fermions to this gauge field, we had to write them in complex pairs, right? Because it's their phase rotation that we're gauging. And so it seems that the stress tensor actually is not the stress tensor of this in terms of real fermions, but rather differs from it by this total derivative, the derivative of this U1 current. And so when n is bigger than 1, when there's some extra index here, which sums over complex fermions, without this, we would have gotten an SO2n current algebra, but this form breaks the SO2n multiplets into UN multiplets.
What is the weight, the conformal weight that you want to assign to one of them?
A half, yeah. Right, but it's true, this twists the things by their overall lambda charge, right? It twists L0 by the overall lambda charge. It seems that from this D-string probe, we've learned that a possible dual of this nine-brain anti-nine-brain system would be a type 2B string that has this UN times UN current algebra. And I say SO9 here because I think that we should be able to cancel the disk-level tadpole by merely turning on time-dependent fields, where we preserve the rotation symmetry. And that's so it seems like an easy thing, but okay. So this is something we'd like to do, and I let me say right away that we haven't done it. Okay. So let me try to give you an argument.
Because you don't need Carré algebra symmetries in 2B.
Well. Okay, yeah. So maybe I should say this first. So you might like to have an R&S description of this, and clearly the problem with this is that these lambda fermions don't have superpartners, right? They don't have world sheet superpartners, if they did have world sheet superpartners, things would be happy. And so you might imagine that. There's some kind of strong coupling effect that grants them to us. So the thing I mean by superpartners is an analogy to in the superstring in flat space. In order to have a world sheet supersymmetric description of a current algebra, these currents need to have superpartners, which I guess. I'm not sure if this is a common name or if Simeon made this word up, which we're calling precurrents. These are fermionic weight 1/2 fields in the adjoint of the current algebra, which aren't visible in the D string gauge. And just so because of that, we haven't really tried to do that. You mean if you only had psi and not j? So the thing that we're sort of given by the holy D string is the j, right? And You know what I mean? Because, I mean, we have this level one current algebra we're made from the free fermions. It's true that you can make it. There, I mean, there is a current you can make out of this psi. I mean, just FABC, psi A, psi B, psi C, this kind of thing. But OK. All right, so so given this, the other possibility for making a supersymmetric world shape description is if the supersymmetry isn't linearly realized. And so in order to preserve this UN, I think unless you add more fields, this has to be the supersymmetry transformation of the lambda field. And so there, the basic framework that that makes this happen is if the supercurrent is some linearly realized piece which acts on so the free psi and x part plus this kind of construction where this this g minus a half thing is the mystery at the moment, and this is just the stress tensor for lambda, and so and g minus one half has the property that it has dimension minus a half, and it transforms like that, so so that these things form a an equal one superconformal algebra. Now, okay, so the, I mean, so the key question is who is this Goldstino? And so one sort of set of ideas that are that seem very tempting is in this construction by Berkowitz and Fafa of the bosonic string as a superstring. There's a field that acts just like this. So there's this, they introduce these B1 C1 ghosts, which are, well, they're not ghosts. They're fermionic, and they have half-integer spins, but they're weird because the C1 has dimension minus a half. And so these things combine to a BC system with C equals minus 11. They're just like the superconformal ghosts, but with the correct statistics. And so you can make a stress tensor out of these things where, so except for this stuff, it's exactly of this form where C1 is playing this, the role of this Goldstino. And this is, this has, the T that you make from this has can be the information that's meant to be conveyed here is that the critical dimension is 15, right? Because these things subtract 11 from 26, and so these people showed that if you set this to zero, it's exactly equivalent to the bosonic string, and so you might imagine that by putting something here, namely some kind of psi dx plus linear dilaton thing, you could get something that was like what we wanted. And it seems that this does give something consistent, but it's not what we want because it has, they seem to always have the bosonic tachyon. It seems like these are always bosonic strings. I think they're pretty interesting. They're really weird. But this another way you might try to do this is that, so since we're breaking Lorentz invariance anyway with the linear dilaton, we might try to make the Goldstino out of this sign-aught fermion. And so a general class of constructions that we've been working on is to try to use the obvious stress tensor, but to make the supercurrent in a sort of long string expansion where we expand in inverse powers of the energy operator. We haven't found a convincing conclusion of this, but this is in progress.
The working assumption here is that if you have one of these unstable theories obtained, say with D and D bar breakers, there should, even though it's unstable, there should be an S dual.
That's right. That's the sort of the hypothesis. Yeah.
Is there evidence for that? I mean, is there? Because if you make the coupling stronger, then it gets faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, there's no argument you have to find something on the other side, is there?
I agree. No, I don't think there is.
You don't want S2, you're suggesting S duality is not a complete symmetry of the theory, that only works for certain configurations?
No. But if you have, let's just instead of thinking of a theory, let's think of a state. Supersymmetric states have S duals because they can't decay if you vary the coupling. Non-supersymmetric states, if you turn up the coupling, generally start to decay faster and faster and faster, and have no discernible...
So when you say a state has an S-dual, what you mean is a state sort of in the same theory, but...
Its S-dual is not a one... An unstable one-particle state, as the coupling gets stronger and stronger, it decays faster and faster, and its S-dual is, just the continuum of multi-particle states. There's no one-particle-to-one-particle mapping.
So you're talking about the S-dual state, you mean another state in the same theory?
The state in the weak coupled theory and a state in the strongly coupled theory that you get to by continuing the coupling. I mean, Right, so you have the theory that's unstable, you turn up the coupling, and the vacuum decays faster and faster and faster, and you turn it up even more, and now you're hoping to get to a dual description in which the vacuum starts decaying slowly. There's no argument for S-duality that you should be able to go through that and get to the other side.
You said that you're going to turn up the coupling, you hope to get to a place where the same vacuum decays?
If you have a theory which is unstable and weakly coupled, as you turn it up, it starts to decay faster and faster. There's no reason that when you make something even stronger, you should get to a weakly coupled theory. S-duality is not it's not like S is, I'm not sure how to say this, but you're not guaranteed to
there's
a natural end to the parameter space.
Into the parameter space that
the coupling gets strong, things get messy.
Okay, so the only useful comment I can make about this is just that the tachyon that we're considering is a charged tachyon, and so it's charged under this open string gauge group, and that's something that we can see also in the fluctuations of this
D string.
There is this. This charge on both sides, and so you could admit it's conceivable that this one is seeing the top of the same hill at both ends of the coupling.
Right. So that because this is, I think, is again a classical notion. But it's classical notion because once you turn up the coupling, you start to pair produce these charge things. It's not a neutral state, but it's full of pairs. And so again, there's no guarantee that you're going to get to a classical state as you make the coupling strong.
I see. Well, so I guess I should, perhaps this is not the right way to think about it, but I suppose I was thinking of it classically in the sense that I was thinking of this comment I made about the configuration space was perhaps telling about my conception of this, which is that there's just some field space that where the dilaton is one of these directions, and so I'm imagining this the tachyon dilaton plane where at g equals zero there's this tachyon, as you move in the dilaton there's also this direction and they share this this Higgs structure. So this is the naive picture I have. I agree that it's not guaranteed.
I guess another related question is, since you have a linear dilaton, the coupling is a function of time. It's weak in the past.
That's right.
And then it gets strong.
So you might imagine
if you make the coupling stronger and stronger, it just gets strong sooner. You're just time translating. So where exactly does this S-dual theory come from?
Well, so I suppose the picture you should have, right, it happens later. Yeah.
So the picture then is that the coupling gets, it's weak, the coupling gets strong, and then maybe there's a simple theory on the side.
Right. If you like, you should really take the study of the D string as motivation for studying this particular supercritical string theory, which, is something that you can try to make sense of on its own. Mm-hmm. So in that spirit, let me try to argue that might be possible in this superstring case. So consider this the usual 10-dimensional Green-Schwarz superstring in this description with kappa symmetry. Let's try to add n-free Dirac fermions to it, as we've been told to by the D string. So now these fermions. They have some kinetic terms which couple to the world sheet metric, which transforms them by the kappa symmetry. So obviously, if the lambdas don't transform, the kappa symmetry is broken by their presence. So that much is true. So now, in two dimensions, transformations of the metric are perhaps less scary than they would otherwise have been, because we can rewrite them as a coordinate transformation and combine with a Weyl rescaling. And so, on the other hand, if you do such a transformation on both the metric and the fermions at the same time, the same transformation, the fermion action is invariant, because it's a conformal field theory. So this seems to imply that it's possible to give the lambdas a transformation, a conformal transformation, parameterized by the kappa, that makes their action invariant.
You don't couple to the thetas, to the Green-Schwarz fermions?
Not directly, no. I mean, that in the D-string theory, they don't.
Okay.
So the funny thing about this is that, for example, if you, in this theory that I've just described, if you fix a light cone gauge, if fix the kappa symmetry by, in the usual way, gamma plus theta equals zero, before we added the lambdas, the Lorentz transformation that changes the light cone frame needs to be accompanied by a compensating kappa transformation to actually be a symmetry. But now that kappa symmetry, that transformation also acts on the lambdas. Let me just say that this is a very funny thing that I don't understand. And so and this is why I was emphasizing that this SO9 as opposed to SO8 seemed very innocent, but actually it's very confusing to me. So I should say that obviously there are many, many examples of theories where you can try to do this and find some sort of supercritical string that you have reason to think might be interesting. Basically any example where there's a charged D string. And so let me just say that these defects in these supercritical gauge Higgs theories that I've described, you should think of as, I tried to argue that that codimension 4 defect in this bosonic theory was like an NS5 ring. So it seems to suggest that you can think of these kinds of objects as regions of space where the string is still higher dimensional, because that's where the tachyon vanishes. It's conceivable that this could give some interesting worldview perspective on NS brains that we don't have. Even if you doubt the utility of non-supersymmetric dualities, which I agree that it's a scary thing, I think these supercritical theories are accessible, should be thought of as accessible excitations above the supersymmetric vacuum, whose instabilities we can try to understand. So that's all.